Welcome to the All Things Nintendo podcast. I'm Brian Shea from Game Informer, and this is a weekly podcast to discuss all the biggest news and games from the world of Nintendo. This week, we have a two-pack of main topics for you, and as a result, there won't be any definitive ranking or eShop gem of the week. After the news, we're going to get Charles Hart's thoughts on Dragon Quest Treasures, which he's been playing. Then at the tail end of the show, we will be reacting to all the news coming out of the Game Awards. But first, we've got a tiny bit of non-TGA news to talk about. Joining me to do just that is Marcus Stewart. Marcus, how is it going today?
Today, it is going very well.
You are fresh off of your trip to the haircut, to the barber to get a haircut. How did the haircut turn out? I think the listeners are dying to know.
I didn't expect you to bring that up, but it went very, very well. I talked to my barber about the rising cost of living, it turns out. It was and the World Cup.
Two very important topics in this day and age. Two very important topics that we will probably not dwell too much on in this episode. However, we actually don't have any Pokemon news. I looked around. There's some minor things that I don't really care to touch on right now. So
why am I even here?
We're going to replace the ceremonial first news item, which has always been Pokemon, with something pretty unexpected, Marcus. And I'm going to get your notes on that. Have you been following this Microsoft and Activision drama that's been going on surrounding them, I guess, acquiring Activision Blizzard?
Yeah, I've heard a thing or two about it.
Yeah, so Microsoft, was it last year, earlier this year? I don't know. All the time blends together at this point.
Yeah, last year, right?
Last year, anyway.
Oh, wait, no, it was earlier this year because I only remember because Nobody Saves the World came out the day that they announced an acquisition, and then nobody talked about Nobody Saves the World, which was sad because that game's pretty good.
Well, ever since they announced it, Microsoft has been under scrutiny for trying to allegedly monopolize the industry because, you know, it announced an acquisition of Activision Blizzard, one of the biggest publishers out there. And, you know, so far it has basically the last 5 or 6 years, it's been a shopping spree for Microsoft. It's acquired things like Blizzard, Ninja Theory, Obsidian, several other studios. And PlayStation has been among those saying they're concerned about Activision's biggest games only appearing on Xbox consoles. So as part of its response, Xbox has repeatedly said it's committed to continuing to release Call of Duty games on PlayStation platforms for the foreseeable future. But we kind of got an added little nugget of news that concerns Nintendo owners from Phil Spencer himself earlier this week. So appearing as a tweet from Phil Spencer's official Twitter account, he says, quote, Microsoft has entered into a 10-year commitment to bring Call of Duty to Nintendo following the merger of Microsoft and Activision Blizzard King. Microsoft is committed to helping bring more games to more people however they choose to play. And so that was good, right? Like, all right, Call of Duty's coming back to Nintendo. But then I saw kind of a passive-aggressive public comment towards Sony. Microsoft's vice chairman and president Brad Smith quote tweeted Phil Spencer's tweet and said, our acquisition will bring Call of Duty to more gamers and more platforms than ever before. That's good for competition and good for consumers. Thank you, Nintendo. Any day Sony wants to sit down and talk, we'll be happy to hammer out a 10-year deal for PlayStation as well.
Oh.
Which, I thought like it seemed like Phil's tweet was kind of like this unifying, like, we're going to have people, however they want to play, can play Call of Duty. And then Brad Smith's just like, yeah, well, Sony, you know, we're all ears when you want to come to the table, but Nintendo.
Is this like the business version of like, oh, like I invited Sony to my birthday party, but they were being unreasonable and they were like, oh, maybe I'll come. I don't know. So instead you're like, screw them. I'm going to invite my other friend, Nintendo, who are more than happy to come to my party. And now that they're here, Sony's looking outside like, wait, what? Why didn't you ask? It's like, I asked you.
Playing Behind Blue Eyes by The Who as they're looking outside at the rainy, as Nintendo and Microsoft hold hands walking down the street with an umbrella.
Yeah, what a turn of events. Also, what a weird time, because didn't Phil tweet that out at like 11 something at night?
It was like it was a weird time. It was pretty late in the evening. I don't know exactly
what
time
it was. He's like in bed tweeting this big announcement.
He's like, oh, by the way, everyone, yeah, Nintendo, Call of Duty's coming for you. But Call of Duty hasn't appeared on a Nintendo platform since the early days of the Wii U. So like, how does this news kind of hit you with that in mind?
I guess indifference. You know, it's funny because when Sony has been arguing that losing Call of Duty is like this anti-competitive thing. Like, it's been the crutch of their argument for trying to stop the approval process for the acquisition. And even before this, one of the big sort of arguing a point against that was like, well, Nintendo hasn't had Call of Duty for years and they're doing great. Like, you don't even miss it on their hardware, you know? So I don't think it's as big of an issue. Like, I get why Sony would argue that, and they probably should argue that because it still affects them. But now to kind of see it actually coming back, it's like, again, Nintendo doesn't need it. Switch sales have been doing perfectly fine without Call of Duty, but it certainly doesn't hurt, right? And I just wonder, because this deal isn't, if it, you know, goes through, which I think people need to be reminded that it's still being approved and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm seeing some rumblings of the FTC wanting to throw some wrenches into this. So it was just before we jumped on to record, I saw somebody, it was unverified, but saying that the FTC might be looking into this acquisition further, possibly resulting in a lawsuit. So we will have to see if it actually goes through, but yeah that is something to keep in mind. That's a good point.
Yeah, and which it's good because they should, because it's a big buy. But assuming it does pass, it's not expected to finish until what, like summer of next year at the earliest. And there isn't a Call of Duty scheduled for next year. Like, they're taking a year off. So it makes me wonder what, I guess 2024 theoretically would be the earliest we would see Call of Duty on Nintendo. And then that brings the interesting question of, will the Switch still be a thing in 2024, or will we have a Switch successor at that point? Because, you know, the Switch is long in the tooth. Would a big budget Call of Duty game, like a straight port, would that work, unless they do like the cloud stuff that they've done for their bigger games? But then that seems like that wouldn't work because it's such a multiplayer focused series.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think the thing that first came to mind was like, oh, would this be on Switch Pro or whatever the Switch successor would be, you know, by the time this stuff gets ironed out?
The thing that drives me crazy is Sony keeps touting like how, like, oh, this is anti-competitive, this is going to be bad for consumers. They've been the ones every step of the way, from my understanding anyway, I may be completely wrong here, but from what I've heard and everything I've seen, they've been the ones that, like, anytime Microsoft has reached out to them about like cross-platform play or cross saves, they've been the one that shot that down. Like, isn't that what happened with like Fortnite originally, when they wanted to do cross-play and then they shot it down, and then eventually, like, Epic was able to like convince PlayStation to like allow for crossplay? And it's been that way every single time one of these stories comes up about like how, all right, there's going to be cross platform play between like Xbox and PC and maybe a like Switch here and there, but like PlayStation was the odd man out every single time. It seems like they've come around on that, but it's like they can't be like, oh, well, this is going to be bad for consumers when it's convenient to them, you know?
Yeah, they have this habit of, when they do come around, it's more like they kind of get dragged kicking and screaming to come around to that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's kind of the case here too. I understand why like Sony should argue everything they can against, you know, against this acquisition happening. But I think the argument they've chosen is maybe one of the most flawed ones, of like calling out Call of Duty specifically. It's like, I feel like there's other things you could say to maybe raise a stronger point than, well, if we don't have Call of Duty, that'd be bad for us. And like, you guys have like how many exclusive series and you guys are doing just fine? It's not like you guys are suffering. I mean, I know that affects, I think the biggest thing that they're afraid of affects PS Plus, right? People won't re-up on PS Plus if they don't have Call of Duty.
They've also had so many years of exclusive content on PlayStation through the Call of Duty series.
Right.
And I think Phil Spencer's even said, like, we're going to honor any, like, exclusivity contracts that are already in place. So, like, I don't know if there's, like, maybe two or three more years of, like, all right, well, PlayStation players will get, like, these weapon skins before Xbox players. They're like, we'll still honor that, but, like, after that, it would probably, you know, be a shift in the power in terms of like, all right, well, maybe now Xbox players will get those skins sooner. But either way, like, I think your point is well made in that we would probably need a Switch Pro or a Switch 2 or something, given how graphically impressive these games have become in recent years when they've shifted primary development over to PC and current gen consoles. Like, maybe a game running on Xbox One or PS4 could run on Switch, but it's a much bigger ask when it's an Xbox Series X or a PlayStation 5 game to bring that over to Switch.
Yeah, I also have a hard time believing they would go back to maybe like the Wii era of like basically making a separate new version of Call of Duty that is exclusive to Nintendo that, you know, accounts for the hardware. Is that just, that's just so much work to basically make two versions of the same game.
And usually that game was much worse.
Yeah, pretty much 9 times out of 10. So, yeah, I don't see that happening either. So, yeah, if they're just going to port the other versions as they are with, like, a graphical frame rate hit, then, you know, it would be nice to have hardware that could at least facilitate that better. But I guess we'll see. And, again, 2024 would be the earliest that this could happen. And that's, again, assuming that this deal even goes through.
But this is such a smart and savvy move from Microsoft, in my opinion, anyway. It's disproving Sony's primary claim that this is going to put up this walled garden that only Xbox players will be able to play Call of Duty. And in response, Microsoft's just like, hey, we're bringing it to a system that Activision hasn't even been supporting through Call of Duty, at least. I mean, Overwatch, Crash Bandicoot, and Diablo already appear on Switch. But, like, Call of Duty hasn't been on the Switch in almost a decade at this point. We're going to bring it back to that system. So it's going to be on more platforms than ever. So that completely neuters PlayStation's argument at this point anyway. I mean, there's obviously other elements to that. And it's also through a company that Microsoft has a good relationship with. Like, we've seen Xbox Game Studios games. Like, we've seen Cuphead. We've seen Ori come over to Switch. We've seen achievement support on Switch. So it's a smart move where Microsoft can be like, look, tell us that we're being anti-competitive by bringing these to even more platforms than it was on before.
Oh, yeah. They came in, like, that argument was basically like a stick house, and then this announcement is like the big bad wolf just blowing it over.
I mean, we'll see how it all pans out, but yeah, like, this is a very good step in the right direction, I think, for Microsoft. And also, Nintendo owners benefit from it, seemingly. I mean, maybe we'll get completely crap ports of it, but I think that we could see like a Warzone type experience be brought over to Nintendo, and I think they'll do gangbusters. Because also, another part of this element of this this story is that Nintendo has been just doing amazing as far as sales are concerned. Like, we talk about it all the time on this podcast, where it's the highest selling platform. It's just blowing everything else out of the water. That instantly gives you an enormous audience to sell your newly acquired IP, which was, I mean, it still is to this day, the highest, or one of the most important, most mainstream appealing franchises on the planet. So being able to have that brought to the most popular console is also a huge win for Microsoft or Activision Blizzard.
Oh, yeah. They're having a fun little party, or at least they presumably will be. You know what just crossed my mind? The best thing for competitive players about Call of Duty on, again, if it's still Switch, gyroscope controls.
Oh, I mean, I've never been a fan of like the motion or gyroscope controls, but I know a lot of people are.
Yeah, me neither. But like, seeing the hardcore Splatoon people swear by it, it seems like the same Call of Duty fans would be like, oh no, this is actually the place to play because this is the only platform that's got the gyro. So I'm just, you know, my KD is unbelievable now because of this.
It makes sense. I mean, I know people who play Splatoon 3 like just swear by the gyro controls, but I just can't get into it. I need to have just like the traditional stick controls.
I'm too self-conscious. I look silly if I'm waving my arms around.
That's true. So next up, third wave of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe DLC is out now, and I talked about it last week about the tracks are included in there, so you can go listen to that episode if you want to hear more about which courses are brought over. But Nintendo also surprised us with a free update to all players. So this lets you customize the items that you can have in the race during gameplay. So the menu lets you choose which items appear or are banned in versus matches and some online modes. And I think like this is kind of weird that like this has always been such a super popular feature in Super Smash Brothers. I'm kind of shocked that it took Mario Kart 8 Deluxe this long to add it.
Yeah, they really had to kind of squeeze like, so like what isn't in this game at this point that we haven't done? And it's almost like, oh, well, like, you know, so we overlooked this one little feature, you know, or not really little, it's a big one, but it's nice to have it. It's just between this and the last like DLC pack, I can't help but wonder, it's like, what even is Mario Kart 9? Like, do we even need it at this point? Like, how do you top Mario Kart 8 at this point? Like, it's like the forever Mario Kart, you know?
It's a good problem to have. I mean, it's the same problem that Super Smash Brothers, whatever the next Smash Brothers game is going to have, right?
Yeah, you're like, this, it almost feels like this would just be the end of the series, right? Because it's like, we've hit, this is the peak. Where do we even go from here? But
it really is.
It's awesome, though. You know, I love Mario Kart 8. I still fire it up from time to time. And, you know, if you want to keep giving me more things to make it better, like, please feed me more.
I keep seeing people complaining like, oh my God, we're still so far away from Mario Kart 9 if they're releasing all these free updates and all this DLC. And it's like, yeah, but what would you want exactly?
Yeah, like what do you want in Mario Kart 9?
Yeah, there's really not much aside from like, all right, maybe we could Super Smash Kart or something like that. Where
Chris
it's like
Pratt.
Just, Chris Pratt voiceover, please. God, that would be so awful if they just started like patching out Charles Martinet like they did with Peter Dinklage.
They just phase him out. Just... Oh no.
Please don't do that. Keep Charles Martinet in the games, please.
Like he was never here. Yeah, like I get wanting Mario Kart 9, just, you know, it's just fun to want new, right? You always want the next thing. And as tall of a task as this is, the idea that Nintendo having to top themselves with this game is exciting. Of like, I want to see how they think they can one up Mario Kart 8 after so much time and content. But I'm really not itching for Mario Kart 9. I don't know if you feel the same way, Brian, but I'm kind of like, no, you can just keep doing this for a while. I'm not really.
Do another booster course pass. Like, do booster course pass 2 after 2023 wraps up and we get all 6 waves and have those be exclusively new tracks.
Give me the ability to double dash in Mario Kart 8.
Yes.
Like, you put the two-person carts. That's like the last big thing they could ever do to solidify this as the perfect Mario Kart is if they add the two-person carts.
Like a double dash mode.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's a good idea. It's just a separate mode.
Yeah, exactly. Like, have like 50cc, 100cc, 150cc, 200cc, and then have each of those with double dash. And then you have like your own circuits and everything.
Man, that's a good idea. I love me some double dash. I miss it.
So what's the first item you are banning?
Banning? Oh, yeah. I'm the chaotic player. I'm like, turn everything on all the time.
Really? I mean, for me, like at first I'm like, all right, well, maybe I get rid of like the lightning bolts because those are annoying or something along those. But I was like, I'm going to ban the coins because that's the most boring item you can receive is a coin.
I mean, they help kind of make you
But you can
faster.
Collect them outside of the item boxes. Like, if you get an item box, the fun is in the roulette and, like, the reward,
okay.
Right?
I get
so,
you.
So, like, get rid of the coins in the item boxes and make it so that, like, only helpful items come up in the boxes.
You know what? Maybe take out the blue shell. The blue shell, I feel like as I've gotten older, it's become more upsetting to get hit with that thing because it's like... I even get mad or I feel bad using it because, like, I'm kind of just punishing a person for playing well. You know, it's like, yeah, they're in first place, but they kind of earned it. And it's kind of almost feels cheap that this thing is focused on, like, hey, you're doing pretty good, right? Now you're not.
I've seen some people suggest that they're only going to play 200cc with only blue shells for maximum chaos.
Oh.
Imagine just the first place person just getting dive bombed completely every single time as soon as they get into first. That's basically how it's gonna happen.
Yeah, like,
or
just...
or sorry, I just hit my mic. Or I get excited about Mario Kart. All right, excuse me. Do only blue shells and the horn that can block the blue shells. I think that would be fun actually.
Take out the, the crazy eight, the figure eight, whatever that power up's called,
yeah.
But it was just 8 blue shells.
Oh my God. Wow. Yeah. We've reached the pinnacle of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Now we can have Mario Kart 9. But anyway, that free update, as well as the 8 new courses that are part of the Booster Course Pass Wave 3 are available now. And there is a Christmas themed level in this one. So I'm hearing that the graphics on this wave are actually better than the ones, the first two waves. Cause that was one of the main concerns was that, like, the resolution wasn't up to par with the stock Mario Kart 8 Deluxe courses. So it sounds like this one is actually a step up. So that's really kind of heartening to hear that they're taking the feedback into account.
Okay.
But the final piece of news that I have, Marcus, and again, we're going to touch on anything that comes out of the Game Awards on the final segment of this episode. Atari. It's a name we haven't really heard very much of in recent years, but they've been on a little bit of a roll lately. So I've talked about Atari 50 and how it's one of the best compilations I've ever encountered. Last week, you can go listen to that episode again for more on that. I think we did about 12 minutes on that compilation. It's incredible. You can go read the review on GameInformer.com. We gave it a 9 out of 10. They also released Atari Mania, which is basically like their version of kind of like a WarioWare NES remix style game, only with Atari titles. Haven't had a chance to play that one yet. But this week, Atari announced another new game. Well, it's kind of a new game, I guess. Akka R, it's called. AKKA ARRH. So this is a prototype arcade game from, I believe, the early 80s. And it's like an old school arcade style wave-based space shooter. And it feels very much in line with kind of like the new wave of reimagined games that Atari's been putting out, where it's like very like neon colored, vibrant, flashing lights. And I've only had a chance to see the trailer, but it looks pretty visually appealing in that regard. And it looks like it could also get pretty intense, like almost maybe not quite to Geometry Wars level of intensity, but it looks like it's definitely the arcade style difficulty where it starts off, oh, yeah, I could do this forever. And then within a minute, you're like, I don't know how anybody gets past this part of the game. But it's currently set to come to Switch as well as every other platform, including Atari VCS, in early 2023. But that's all the official news that I've seen. But I looked at the eShop page. eShop page says February 21st. I don't know if that's an official date or if that's a placeholder date. But either way, it sounds like maybe Nintendo had leaked the release date there. But do you have any interest in this game?
So this is to clarify, this is a prototype of an Atari game that was unfinished until now?
That's my understanding of it. So it was like a prototype arcade game, and I believe it was 1982. It was released to a few arcades, and they were just trying to like do like test market stuff, but it never really made it wide.
Right.
And now it looks like they're getting the original creator back, and he's going to finish it and put it out on modern consoles.
That's wild. Yeah,
it's
really
awesome.
I'd be down to check it out just for like the historical angle of it. You know, it's kind of like almost a Star Fox 2 situation.
Yeah, exactly.
So you really don't see that happen a lot. You know, there's so many prototypes or even just announced games that were canceled that I would love to see get the same sort of like revival. So even if this is something like I've never heard of this game until now, but
yeah, it's kind of billed as like a super rare arcade game because it was released to a few select arcades, but then it would never made it to a wide release. So it's cool that it's kind of getting its second life and like its chance at widespread success. Now it does look like it's a fun game, and the modernizations that they seem to have done look really awesome as well.
You know what they also need to bring back in a similar vein of, oh God, the name just escaped me. What's that arcade game that everyone said was haunted? Yes, Pong. They really got to bring this. I heard that wasn't finished. They should bring that back.
Polybius?
Yeah, Polybius. I was going to say Plebius.
So Polybius, they actually did do, it's funny, the creator of Akka R actually did a game, I believe in 2008, called Polybius.
Huh.
And it was based on the original like rumor, like the urban legend of Polybius, which was that basically it was like this mind control video game that was put out by, I think, the CIA in order to see if like video games could control the minds of people, because there were all these stories coming out about how like video game addiction was real and like it was causing people to do like violent acts and everything. So the urban legend goes, I believe, that the CIA or some other governmental organization put out a few cabinets in a few like test markets to see if it could like do kind of like this like MK Ultra style like mind control through making people play these video games. And I mean, there's never been any proof of it. There's no like any kind of like physical cabinets that anybody has, but the creator of Akka R, who is back for this version of it, worked on a game called Polybius in the 2000s, and it was based on that urban legend. So that's a very interesting connectivity point that you found there, Marcus.
See, look at that. That was a guess. Yeah, bring that back. Bring back Polybius, complete with government surveillance. Because, you know, in the 2020s, we're just used to that now. That's just, it's an open secret. So they can actually just come out and be like, yeah, we were doing this back in the 80s. And now you can say it's a feature, because it wouldn't be Polybius if it wasn't there, right?
Yeah, now we do it willingly by signing up for social media and recording podcasts.
Yeah, agreeing to license agreements that we don't read.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many things that I owe companies that I hope they never try to collect on, because I've signed so many licensing and end user agreements that I just have hit scroll all the way to the bottom, hit accept, and let me just play my EA Sports game.
We're all going to be human Sentai pads one day.
Oh, God. That was what the South Park episode on that was. Yeah.
Yep.
But anyway, that's a fun way to close out this segment. That's the news for this week, Marcus. Thank you for joining me. Before we head out, let the people know where to find you on social media.
You can find me on Twitter at MarcusStewart7, which is the number 7.
Thanks again. We are going to take a quick break, and when we get back, I'm going to be joined by Charles Hart to break down Dragon Quest Treasures. We will be right back. We're getting closer to the end of the year, but we've seen no signs of game releases slowing down. Normally, October and November are the busy months of the year, but we've had some heavy hitters come out this December. One of those games is not only a Nintendo Switch exclusive, but it's out today. Dragon Quest Treasures is a new prequel to Dragon Quest XI, but it's not a turn-based RPG like that game. We're going to dig a bit into Dragon Quest Treasures, and joining me to do just that is Game Informer's Charles Hart. Charles, how are you doing today?
Hello, I'm doing good. Good recording day.
Good recording day it is. So you have been playing Dragon Quest Treasures, and for people who may not have kept up with it, like, so full disclosure, I saw this revealed, like, whenever they announced it, and I was like, okay, this seems really cool. Like, this seems like it's kind of like Monster Hunter meets Breath of the Wild meets Dragon Quest and, like, a few other things mixed in. But they put out so much information about what this game is. Like, there's, like, novels of blog posts on the Square Enix website, and I was like, I can't keep up. They did the same thing for Harvestella, to be fair. I just can't keep up with this, the info dumps that they were doing for this game. So can you give me, like, just an overview of what Dragon Quest Treasures even is?
Yes. So Dragon Quest Treasures is an action RPG. It's got kind of like, I would classify it a semi-open world. It's got, like, big open chunks of the world you can go visit.
It's almost like Pokemon Legends Arceus in that regard?
Yes, yes, okay. Very, very much like that. And yeah, one of the main mechanics is you're hunting for treasure. So you got your party of monsters, you recruit Dragon Quest monsters, they give you visions of, like, where you can find treasure, and then that will, like, upgrade your base and get you access to more abilities and boost your stats and all that stuff. And then you're hunting for ultimate treasure, which is the Dragon Stones.
Okay, so it sounds like it has kind of like a defined gameplay loop in that regard, where it's like, what is, like, the kind of, you do this, that lets you do this, that lets you do this. Like, what is the overall loop of, like, kind of how gameplay plays out in Dragon Quest Treasures?
Yeah, so it takes a hot minute to get to the point where you're starting in, like, the consistent gameplay loop. But once you get there, you kind of have, like, a home base. We compared it to Legends Arceus in the sense that it has, like, big, you know, open world areas you can explore. Unlike that game, right from the start, you can go to all 5 of the main areas. And it's often encouraged for you to do so because they'll have these, they call treasure forecasts. Of different monsters you have will have different chances of finding different treasure in different places. So, like, you might have a slime that's really good at finding weapons, but you might have a Drakki that's great with armor and statues. And so I don't know, like, how often it is. I think it's, like, a real-time thing because it usually resets whenever I, like, close the game for the night and then open it back up the next day. But it'll be like, oh, there's a new treasure forecast, and then I can see, okay, if I go to, you know, the winter area, I have a higher percent chance of finding treasure more often, which is when, like, your monsters are like, oh, there's treasure nearby, versus if I were to go to the desert right now, you know, it's a low chance. But, you know, if I do the winter area and come back, the forecast might change, and now, like, the desert's going to be perfect for my party.
Okay.
So you're really encouraged to run around all these different areas, and it does, the levels do scale, which is cool. So it's near the first area, I found, like, at first it was, you know, level, like, 2 and 3 and 4. And as I started leveling up, they started increasing a little bit. And it's not like I should clarify. It scales relative to where you are. So in the first train station in every area, there'll be, like, low approachable levels. But the farther you get from there, the higher they'll go. And then that kind of ascends with you as you go. So right now, you know, I'm like level 20. The guys near the starting camp have like capped at level 7. So that's not increasing anymore. But it matches where you are in the game, so you can actually like explore all these places.
All right. And like, I guess I'm hearing a lot of monster names, a lot of terminology. I am not a Dragon Quest fan in pretty much any way. Like, I've tried a couple of games and I've bounced off them pretty much. Do you think that there's a familiarity with the series that's necessary for this game?
So I'm also not a Dragon Quest fan. Not because I dislike it, but because I've just literally never given it much of a shot. I feel like I understand everything going on with this game, and I just haven't played it before, so I think it's fine. It's I think technically a prequel to Dragon Quest XI, but the story is, it's very straightforward, at least where I am at, of just Eric and me are two twins. They want to find treasure, so then they go out and they hunt for treasure, and there's really not much more than that. So they also, I should also say, this is this is in the trailer, they get sucked into a portal very early on, so it's unclear if they're even in the same world that Dragon Quest XI takes place in, because these all have talking monsters. I don't know if they talk in Dragon Quest XI, but yes, that's the basic gameplay loop, is you're exploring, you recruit the monsters, and then you can choose different monsters to get higher chances of getting different treasure and stuff.
So for somebody who is coming at this from not having any Dragon Quest experience, is there like because again, like when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's like Breath of the Wild meets Pokemon meets Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. Is there like a kind of a combination that you can say, like, this is like the perfect brew to make Dragon Quest treasures, like these franchises mixing together?
I think you said Legends Arceus, and now I am thinking of how I feel like that's pretty good, just in terms of how varied the environments are and how, like, oh, what's that monster over there? I haven't befriended that one yet, so I might want to go chase that one down. I don't want to emphasize, I guess you can go to a lot of areas from the very beginning, but the gameplay loop is you're getting this treasure. Each of your monsters can only hold so much treasure. And once you get that much treasure, if you die, you lose it. So you want to just go back to the base. So your expeditions usually don't last more than like half an hour. So it's not really meant, the focus is not to explore an area. It's to grab your treasure. I've just gotten to a part now where there's like rival gangs that might like show up and try to kill you to take your treasure. But it's more of a risk reward of like, how far can I get with the treasure and then get back? And then eventually you'll get more like fast travel points you can go to and stuff. But I don't know if I've really played a game super like this, but it does almost, I was going to say, kind of feels like a dungeon crawler, just in that like traditional risk reward of like, do I go back and heal, but then have to make all the way back, or do I press further and see what I can get? But yes, I would say probably Legends Arceus.
Okay. So how does exploring the world feel? Because I know that was one of the main things. It's like, all right, well, you have these monsters on your side, like they can help you, like you can grab a Draki and he'll like let you glide or like bounce off of something else. And like how does it feel to get around the big open areas?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So the one impression I got playing this game, which is very odd, and once I thought it, I haven't been able to shake it, it almost feels like the player model got shrunk down at some point during development, because a lot of stuff I feel like is just a little bit like scaled up from like the size you should normally be able to interact with it. So but and the monsters that you use to traverse, each monster has a forte, which is like its traversal ability. So you mentioned a Draki, this little bat dude that can let you glide. The slimes you can bounce off to jump really high. And that's all fine. My main issue is that the sprint mechanic is locked behind. It's a forte, so you have to have a sprinter in your party in order to run around quickly. And it also just gets kind of repetitive, right? Because you're getting your treasure and then you're going back and then you're coming back to the station and it's like the same place you've been to before. And I actually had the experience of like leaving, coming back to the base and then going back to the original place and seeing like the like treasure visions. Your monsters have like visions of treasure of where they are, and you gotta figure out what it is based on like the pictures. It's kind of like the memories in Breath of the Wild. And they're just in the same place. I had like the same three in the same spot when I came back one time. It feels a little weird. There's also, I haven't even mentioned the combat, which is, you know, a main portion of this. It's an action RPG. I would like this game a lot more if I enjoyed the combat more, because it's such a large portion of the gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's mainly your monsters attack kind of passively. They just do their abilities. And then you have a dagger that you can attack with. And then there's also like a dodge roll button. And other than that, there's not a whole lot of like strategy that really goes into it. You also have a slingshot with all these pellets you can load into it. But I found aiming that is kind of awkward. And most of the time, it's if you're just a high enough level, you just kind of sweep through them. And if you're not high enough level, you just kind of get plowed over. I guess that's how all our RPGs work. But something about the combat for me just doesn't really work. And I think it makes exploring kind of clunky, because, you know, I can't go to every area right off the bat, both because I want to get my treasure back and also because there's just going to be harder and harder fights.
So it sounds like you're not loving this game so far. I mean, we should be clear that this is not like a review. Like, you mm-hmm. are not finished with the game yet, but this is just kind of like an in-progress impression. Since the game is out today, I wanted to have you on this podcast to talk about it. But like, overall, how are you feeling about this game?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a game. So I mentioned that it takes a while to get going. And I think my thought at first was like, okay, you know, RPGs are like this. I'm just going to get through this tutorial. And then eventually, like, my abilities will open up enough. And I've made it like, you know, like 10 hours into this game at this point. And I feel like I'm still waiting for my things to open up to feel like I really have control over what's going on. I think if you really like Dragon Quest monsters and characters, I think you'll get a little bit more enjoyment out of it than I am, because it is like charming. I'm sure it would be, you know, nostalgic for some people. But right now I'm finding it kind of tedious, and I'm hoping that maybe you know, there's a thing on the horizon that's going to actually switch the game around for me, and my opinion's going to change. But yeah, at the moment I'm not crazy about it, but I do think there is an audience for it. I also think it might do a little better for like a younger audience. I do think it's kind of skewed that way. But at the same time, a lot of the gameplay is so repetitive. Like, I don't know if I was a kid, I feel like I would lose my patience with it fairly quickly. But now, yeah.
Isn't there some sort of like base mechanic as well?
Yes, but it's not. I mean, so you have a base and you're expanding the base, but for where I'm at, all that really amounts to is like going out in the world and then doing a side quest to get like a vendor to be like, oh, now I can craft pellets, or now this person is going to sell me materials I can use to recruit more monsters. And I think there's other stuff I haven't gotten to yet, but it's more about your gang, which is what they're calling like your group of monsters that you level up over time by getting treasure. You can pick like certain treasure to display that will like appreciate in value over time to bring your gang's like treasure hoard gold value up, which is fun. Also, I should mention the treasures themselves. They're all like cute little models of things. Again, I'm not super familiar with Dragon Quest, but I can tell like these are like iconic monsters and iconic like characters. And I think that would definitely be a nice thing of, if you're familiar with the Dragon Quest series, the act of receiving one of these treasures and being like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, blah, blah from Dragon Quest IX. That's so cool. I think that would definitely be enjoyable. And then you could put them up on a pedestal.
So it doesn't sound like it's kind of like the Super Smash Brothers style of like trophy collection. Like, is there any kind of like, all right, there's like some backstory to this treasure. Like, have you selected on your shelf or anything? Or is it just like, oh, there's a thing that I can look at?
You know, I haven't. I think they do have little descriptions, but I haven't really looked at it. I would say it's not unlike a Smash Bros.
Okay.
Treasure collecting thing. They just don't have names. So like, the one I'm thinking of where I can just tell like, oh, this is definitely a Dragon Quest character. Their name is like Spoiled Aristocrat or something like that, where it would be like a funny nod to them if you've played the game, but it doesn't outright name them. Mm.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I think that's a pretty decent look at Dragon Quest Treasures. You are still plowing through this thing. You're going to have your review up on GameInformer.com at some point in the coming week, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sorry you're not loving it so far, but I hope it turns around and gets a lot better in the kind of the back half of this experience. But any closing thoughts before we get you out of here?
No, I think my hope with Dragon Quest Treasures, I think playing it and you know, I'll keep this in mind with my review. I don't think it's for me, but I don't think that means that it won't find its audience, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't think it's a game I would recommend to everyone, but I am hoping that when it comes out, there's going to be a group of people that are like, oh, we love this game. This is exactly what we wanted from a Dragon Quest spinoff. And I'm excited to see what other people think when it comes out.
All right. Again, you can keep your eyes on GameInformer.com to see Charles's full review in the coming weeks or so. Dragon Quest Treasures is out today exclusively on Nintendo Switch. If this sounds like it interests you, Charles, where can people find you on social media?
I am on Twitter at ChuckDuck365.
We are going to take one final break of this episode, and when we get back, we'll be reacting to the news coming out of the Game Awards. We will be right back. It is another episode where we don't have Definitive Ranking or eShop Gem of the Week. What we do have, however, is some stuff to chat about coming out of the Game Awards. Jeff Keighley's annual award show went down in Los Angeles just yesterday, and we got a ton of big reveals, and a couple of those came from Nintendo. Joining me to recap some of the big Nintendo-based talking points is Wesley LeBlanc. Wesley, how are you doing this fine Friday?
Hello, I'm doing great because I actually had a really great time watching the Game Awards last night. I think it was the best show, probably the best gaming show I've seen in a minute.
Yeah, we're mostly here to talk about kind of like the Nintendo stuff, but I do want to get your thoughts overall on the show. Like, I think that personally, it was one of the better Game Awards, maybe the best Game Awards. And I was at the one last year, and it was awesome to be there in person. I wish I could have been there this year because it seemed like there was some really cool stuff and like, this was like the first year that it seems like everybody was kind of back, you know, like last year there was a lot of like, it was half capacity. There weren't a lot of like international developers that traveled. This year, you know, we had Hidetaka Miyazaki from Software, who lives in Japan. A lot of other developers traveling from all over the world, it seemed. And
Kojima was there.
Yeah, Kojima was there, correct. So yeah, there was a lot of international presence, which was not really the case last year, unfortunately, but it seems like the Game Awards are back in full force now. So what were your overall opinions of the Game Awards show?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a mix that I kept my expectations in check, kind of because Jeff kind of put us all in check with the show, but like he surpassed my expectations with this show. I thought there's always more care that could be put towards the actual awards segment, but you know, this is half awards, half announcements at this point, and I don't think we're going to get anything different ever.
Oh, I would say it's more than half.
Yeah, fair. That's fair.
It's like 70-30 maybe.
Yeah, and I mean that's the formula he's sticking with, so it's tough. You know, we can make the same complaints, but that's his show now. But I thought, like, I was excited about the awards. There were a lot of surprises, some great speeches, a lot of awesome announcements, like some that I never ever would have guessed, like Ghost Story Games is Ken Levine's new game. Judas, cannot believe that appeared there. Never would have. I didn't even know that they had a game. And I mean, I knew they had a game in development, but you know, that studio has gone through some things. But yeah, it was just announcement after announcement that really surprised me. Hades 2, Death Stranding 2, a lot of stuff. And another Bayonetta game coming out next year, which we'll talk about. Like, just lots of surprises, and I think that's what he's going for, and he did really well this year.
And I guess we should talk about Hades 2 a little bit, because Hades 1 is on Switch, and I'd be very shocked if Hades 2 didn't eventually come to Switch or whatever console Nintendo is running at the time of Hades 2 launches. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, that game looks super good. It's starring a new protagonist. Yeah. I forget what her name is. It's not like an actual name. It's like the, I forget what like they refer to her as, but like, it's not like her actual name. It's like kind of like a moniker that she goes by. But I mean, if you like Hades and think that like that's one of the best games on the Switch, then boy, do I have good news for you, because it's entering early access next year, which is only on PC, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I would be extremely shocked if it didn't go multi-platform, given the success Hades 1 had on all the consoles under the sun.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a much faster turnaround because they did the early access thing with Hades, and they spent, which what that was announced at the Game Awards, the Hades early access. And I think they spent about 3 years before launching into 1.0. So they gathered a ton of, you know, feedback and player input. And that's why you get like Hades, which is one of the best games released that year. But I think they've got a really solid foundation. So I feel like this early access will be shorter because they already kind of know what they're doing with this franchise. And yeah, it'd be a huge miss for it to not come to Switch or, you know, depending on how long this game's in development, whatever platform Nintendo might have at the time.
Yeah, I am excited for that. Like, and I didn't even play Hades as much as everybody else seemed to. Like, I put a few hours into it and I was like, oh, I love this. And then I just got distracted by other things, which is the story of this entire podcast.
Yeah.
But
it looks
great,
though.
That was one of the biggest surprises. It's also Supergiant's first sequel because they went from Bastion to Transistor, which Transistor felt kind of like a spiritual successor to Bastion, but it was not a direct sequel. Then something completely different with Pyre, which was kind of like a NBA Jam-inspired RPG, which was kind of wild. And then they did Hades, and obviously Hades has been their biggest success, even though Bastion was also a huge success in its own right. But Hades, I feel like, took everything to a next level. So it makes sense that they would want to follow that up as their first sequel. But I don't think anybody was expecting that to show up. When they said Supergiant, I was like, all right, cool. I've always wondered, like, what's going to be next from this company after the wild success that Hades had?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it's another Hades.
Yeah, I never would have guessed that'd be a sequel to Hades. When I saw Supergiant, even at first, because the art style is pretty similar, but the characters were all very different looking, I was like, oh, this is interesting. What is this? And then it wasn't until like they actually showed gameplay that I was like, oh my God, this is Hades 2. Wow.
Yeah, I was like, oh, good. They're going back to like kind of Greek mythology again. All right, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay. The gameplay is coming up. All right. Oh, okay. Yeah, this is Hades.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one that I was very shocked by and I'm very much looking forward to. It makes me want to go play Hades again. That's just exactly the effect that Hollow Knight Silksong showing up at the Summer Game Fest had when I was out there covering that. It was like, oh, all right, yeah, I'm going to fire up Hollow Knight on my flight back to Minnesota.
Nice, so yeah.
That's kind of what I'm feeling with Hades.
Yeah, same. I think I might pick it up on PlayStation now because I have played it on Switch, but I kind of want to get some trophies for it. And I think it's on sale because of the Game Awards.
All right. All these platforms. By the way, that's something we should touch on is like, if you are listening to this like relatively recent after it comes out, like the weekend of this episode hitting, there's a pretty good sale happening with it's just like, I think it's called like Critically Acclaimed Partners, where it's just like all these third party developers have just deep discounts on really every platform, but the Critically Acclaimed Partners is specific to the eShop on Switch. So if any of these games that like have come out in recent years that you just kind of missed, that you keep hearing about, check the eShop because there's actually a pretty decent chance that it's on sale right now.
Yeah,
so that's
sure.
A very good call out, Wesley. Let's get into the two, I guess, first party Nintendo announcements here. And I guess Bayonetta is not really a first party Nintendo, but it's an exclusive Nintendo announcement. And that is Bayonetta Origins, Syriza, and the Lost Demon. And this is maybe as unexpected of an announcement as we got in terms of like, oh, this is not at all what I expected. Basically, it's a prequel to the Bayonetta series, and it's not the traditional Bayonetta gameplay. It's like a storybook-inspired adventure with like kind of like, it looks like exploration gameplay and I don't know what really to make of it. So you take control of Bayonetta before she's Bayonetta. She's just known as Syriza, and she's taking on an apprenticeship as a young witch. Mm-hmm. And like it has a storybook art style, and it's just not at all like what I would think if they're like, oh, you're going to do a Bayonetta origin story.
Yeah, it's I haven't played Bayonetta 3 yet, but I saw a lot of people making jokes that like you can play a demo of this Origins game in Bayonetta 3.
You can.
Is that the case? Like, there's
If you go into Bayonetta 3 and you go to Rodin's shop, the Gates of Hell, you can buy the old picture book. And then if you unlock it with three keys, there's actually a playable teaser for Bayonetta Origins.
Oh, that's really cool. But you didn't know at the time that that's what that was.
I don't think so. No. I mean, I don't even know if that's a new, I haven't played Bayonetta 3, admittedly. So oh, okay. I don't know. Like Blake might know, but who knows aside from Blake. But yeah, this is a game that I was very surprised by, because it was like, all right, here comes Bayonetta. I thought it was going to be DLC for Bayonetta 3, but no, it's an all new game and it comes out on March 17th. So we don't even have that long to wait.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to be like a full price $60 package or if this is like a, you know, couple hours type thing.
It seems like it's got to be smaller scale. Like this definitely doesn't feel like the budget that a Bayonetta 3 has. Like if I had to guess, I mean, let me bring it up here. I would have to guess that it's going to be like a $40. Oh no, it is $60 according to the eShop. Yeah, so maybe it's a longer game than we're giving it credit for. But yeah, according to the eShop currently, Bayonetta Origins, Syriza, and the Lost Demon is $60. And again, comes out March 17th.
That is interesting because I didn't see any combat in it, but it didn't look like a platformer either. It kind of just looked like a storybook, which.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say like that's not deserving of $60. I'm sure they've worked really hard on it, but I'm excited to, or, you know, I'm interested in seeing how this is a full game.
Here's the I'm looking at the eShop more now, and here's like some description of the gameplay. So it says Syriza and Cheshire, who is one of the demons from, or one of the summons from Bayonetta, coordinate their effort to fight fairies and solve puzzles. Use the left Joy-Con controller to move Syriza and bind enemies with her magic. With the right Joy-Con controller, move Cheshire to slash and chomp foes. So almost brothers.
Or Astral Chain is what it's making me think of.
Oh, that's probably another a better analog game. Given that it's platinum, yeah.
But interesting. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, so it sounds like they're taking some chances with the franchise, which is good. I'm assuming the voice actor of Bayonetta is going to be not Helena Taylor.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah, at this point, I think that she might be not coming back in that role, unfortunately for her. But that's not the only Nintendo announcement that we got last night. We got a trailer for Fire Emblem Engage that showed off some DLC. So there will be four waves of DLC for Fire Emblem Engage, which that game, by the way, sneaking up on us, coming out January 20th, which is so weird. I still don't understand fully what this game is, I don't think.
I was talking with a buddy last night. It is the next Fire Emblem game, like mainline, but it doesn't feel like it. And I don't know if that's because of maybe I'm just not vibing as much with the presentation so far, especially compared to Three Houses, or it might just be the marketing going on, but I don't know. I'm not getting the sense that this is like the Fire Emblem sequel to Three Houses. Not, you know, direct, but this is the next mainline Fire Emblem.
Yeah, it feels like less monumental than a mainline. It almost feels like the hype levels, maybe we're insulated in like in an echo chamber here, but like the hype levels feel closer to something like Fire Emblem Warriors, where it's like, oh, okay, here's another adventure in this universe, but it's not like the next mainline one. It's like how like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet had all this hype, but maybe Legends Arceus didn't, except for like the mainline fans. And then of course, you know, Legends Arceus ended up being probably the better game.
Yeah. But I think for me, a lot of it, and we're about to dive into more of this, is like the announcements for this game so far have been like, hey, here's some past characters from Fire Emblem games you love that are going to be in this. So it kind of has like a, I don't know, like a weird spinoff, like all your like favorite
Fire Emblem
characters
Warriors,
are here.
Where it's a compilation, like kind of like Hyrule Warriors was like, all right, this is not an actual Zelda game, but it's like a greatest hits of all the characters that you love, you know, and love. But yeah, so like Fire Emblem Engage, you have emblems that you can use to summon heroes to kind of fight alongside you. And like they boost your stats and they assist you in combat. But they revealed that these waves of DLC are going to add additional emblems for you to summon, and they're going to include characters from past games. So the first wave that they showed off during the Game Awards will add Edelgard, Dimitri, and Claude, geez, I can't talk, from Three Houses as one of the in-game emblems, and then Tiki from Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light as another emblem. And that's the only wave they've announced so far, but they've said that all four waves of that DLC will hit before the end of 2023, and then they'll all be included in the Fire Emblem Engage expansion pass. So yeah, I don't really know what to make. Like, I don't even know like how the combat works in this. Is it like traditional Fire Emblem, like turn-based strategy?
Yeah, that's from the videos I've seen. It does seem that way. Like, it does seem like a traditional Fire Emblem game in terms of combat and even visuals. I think it's, you know, a very pretty looking Fire Emblem game. But yeah, it is a Fire Emblem game. Like, it's a mainline Fire Emblem game from everything I've seen, watched, and read of it. But the feel isn't there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hopefully like once the holiday mess that we are just about to emerge from is behind us completely, we'll start getting a little bit more hype for like what's to come in 2023. You know, those lists are coming. Like,
yeah,
we're going to do that episode on this podcast. Probably the first Friday of 2023 is going to be a let's look ahead at everything that we know is coming out this year. And your every website you go on is going to have the most anticipated of the year stacked up on their site. So hopefully that's when kind of the hype engines will start revving. Maybe Nintendo's playing it safe and like being like, all right, well, let's let all of the hype kind of exhaust itself for this holiday season. Once that's gone, we'll start telling you all about this Fire Emblem Engage. I would not be surprised if early January we get like a Fire Emblem Engage focused direct.
Yeah, for sure.
Just to like give us like, here's everything you need to know about this game. And I think they'd be smart to do that. But again, it's Nintendo, and we will never be able to estimate or guess what they're going to do. So that is the Nintendo relevant announcements that we got during the Game Awards. And to be honest, like, I understand why the ratio of announcements to awards is what it is, because if it was just like a straight award show, I probably wouldn't tune in. I'd probably be like, all right, I'll read like the recap after the fact.
Yeah. It wouldn't have the production values without, if it was just awards, he would not be securing the money he's able to secure that puts on this, you know, frankly, astounding show for a person to create and produce.
Yeah, and I know that some of those reveals are probably pretty big revenue drivers, whether it's like people paying to be on the show or whether it's just the number of eyes, like getting the new From Software game, getting the new Kojima Productions game, like getting the reveal of Ghost Story Games title, like those are all huge gets. And like,
yeah,
that's going to make all those people come back again next year because they know what to expect. They know that they're going to get some of the biggest games from the biggest creators revealed or at least shown for the first time. And as is the case for like Jedi Survivor, we got like our first real trailer of that game. So it's like so much goodwill has been built up by Jeff Keighley at this point, especially when you consider how far he's come. Like, yeah, he was in charge of like the Spike TV Video Game Awards, like,
yeah,
way back
when Last of Us got announced, if I remember correctly.
That was such like a transparent, like, this just isn't a well put together show.
Yeah.
And he has come so far. Now the quality he's brought to this point has rivaled pretty much any award show at this point, I would say. And the entertainment value is there with all the reveals, and that's how he gets those people to tune in. So good on him. So those are the reveals that Nintendo had, but Nintendo also took home a pretty good haul of awards.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they had kind of a sneaky good year, I think. And we'll talk more about that in a future episode when we do like the best of 2022. But here's what Nintendo took home at the Game Awards this week. And that is Kirby and the Forgotten Land won Best Family Game. So good for that. Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope won Best Simulation / Strategy Game, which I don't know why those two are lumped in the same category, but it won. Splatoon 3 won Best Multiplayer Game, which
this is a big. I think this is the biggest surprise for Nintendo for me.
I would agree.
Did not have my money based on, you know, what people say about Splatoon 3 and the other games in that category. I would not have guessed Splatoon 3 at all.
Yeah, for sure. And then The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom won Most Anticipated Game, which, yeah, sure.
Is that like it's like third time doing that?
Probably. Somewhere along those lines. I think it won. I did win last year, right?
It was either that or Elden Ring, but it's definitely won before.
Yeah. And then Bayonetta 3 won Best Action Game. And I know some people were disappointed that like Xenoblade Chronicles 3 didn't win Game of the Year, but that was going to be an uphill battle against Elden Ring and God of War, no matter which game like Nintendo sent out for that.
Yeah, Agreed. But, I mean, it is what it is, but like, I don't think Xenoblade really had a chance at all in that. No,
unfortunately not. And then I know that like the Sonic community was very, very upset they did not win like the Viewer's Choice Award. There was a huge campaign going on within that community, and Sonic Frontiers lost to Genshin Impact. And Jeff Keighley did acknowledge that there were some bot activity in the Viewer's Choice vote, which I don't know. Maybe the Sonic community is not only passionate, but also tech savvy. Possibly. It was winning some of those rounds pretty handily, and like you said, he removed all the bot votes, so maybe that was why it didn't win.
Yeah, that was it was pretty funny to hear him mention that like on camera.
Yeah. But anything else you want to talk about with the Game Awards before we wrap up here, Wes?
No, I don't think so. The new clip of Mario was nice, the Mario movie.
Oh, that's right, we did get that.
I'm most fascinated with that movie. Well, one, I just want to point out the score was amazing. Like the music is going to be so good in this movie. And I love seeing how they are explaining things that are very normal to us playing Mario, like warp pipes and the clear tubes and the platforming and stuff. And I like seeing that Mario, I like seeing him struggle to go through the clear pipe or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be one of the more fun aspects of this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that clip made me feel a little bit more confident in Chris Pratt's voice acting, because like so far we've only heard, like, aside from the woohoo when he's doing the Mario Kart thing in the second trailer, like we haven't really heard him say any kind of like emotion, you know? Yeah. Like it's just been like, ah, Mushroom Kingdom, here we come. And it's like, all right, well, I guess that's what we're going to get. It's just kind of like a monotone Mario.
Yeah.
And but I think he had a little bit more emotion in this one.
Yeah, and he's definitely doing a voice. Like, I have since turned on, like, I was like, oh, this is basically just Chris Pratt. But, like, he's definitely doing a voice. You know, whether you like it or don't like it is something else. But, like, he's not just phoning in with his voice. So, that's going to be, I'm more excited to see how it plays in full scenes. But I'm more open to it now.
And as Kyle pointed out in last week's show, when we were talking about the second Mario movie trailer, he's actually a very good voice actor. Like,
yeah,
the Lego movie, he did a great performance. Or I guess, was that last week? I don't know. Again, all the times blend together at this point in our lives. But yeah, I think it was last week. And he's actually a very good voice actor when it comes to like these types of roles. So I have faith that it will be a good performance. I think it's just different from what everybody's expecting, because you know, we're so used. We have 25 years of Charles Martinet voicing him, so it's very tough to disassociate or decouple Mario from that voice.
Yeah, I mean, that is Mario's voice. There's not even been really other instances, so I think that's the most difficult part. There's, you know, with Batman, Kevin Conroy is a lot of people's Batman, but we've heard so many different iterations of Batman that when there's a new one, you're like, okay, I'm open to this. With Mario, it has just been Charles pretty much, so
aside from like the early like movies and TV shows that we had, like Bob Hoskins and Captain Lou Albano. But
yeah, so the shell shock is just a lot more.
Which, by the way, that was a very touching trailer from Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Oh my gosh, yes.
They revealed that Kevin Conroy had recorded voiceover for that game, and God, they delivered he delivered the line so perfectly.
It was so good. My heart, oh my gosh, I'm not ready for that game. It's gonna hurt.
Yeah, rest in peace, Kevin Conroy. We didn't really touch on that in this this show, but you know, just a legend a few weeks ago. And I'm excited to hear him in the Suicide Squad game one last time, theoretically. But yeah, on that note, I think we're going to wrap up there, Wes. Thanks so much for joining me for this final segment of this kind of jam-packed episode.
Yes, of course. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you so much to everyone for listening. As always, I'd appreciate if you throw All Things Nintendo a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button. And then, of course, get any questions or comments in at allthingsnintendo@gameinformer.com. Or you can hit me up on my personal Twitter or Instagram at Brian P. Shea. And then you can always join us on the Game Informer Community Discord, which is a perk for subscribing to our Twitch channel, even just for 1 month. Wesley, tell everyone where they can find you on the internet.
You can find me at GameInformer.com, of course, or putting up some new gameplay todays on the Game Informer YouTube channel. And on Twitter, you can find me at LeBlancWes.
That's our show for this week. Thank you again for listening. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Bye.